Good morning, everybody, and welcome to my table. Hi, this is Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy. And we are live downtown in the City of Gastronomy at the tail end of the 10 West Festival. There is no place I would rather be than right here, right now. Oh, and where is right here? La Fonda La Hermanita, the brilliant new cafe that is a buzzy, wonderful, relaxing courtyard right in the heart of what is the new Coronet in the Cushing Street location. So if you're a longtime Tucsonan, you know that Cushing Street was a beloved place, an institution, really. And now, under the helm of Sally Kane and her incredible team, including Chef Erica, who we're going to talk to in just a little bit, there is a new, vibrant vitality of conviviality, of hospitality, of welcoming, of delicious. They're making everything from scratch, and it is remarkably delicious. I'm sitting here in a very special space that most people probably didn't even know existed if you ever came down to the old Cushing Street. It's been revived. It's called the Booth Room because there are literally booths. But that does it an injustice, because this magical space is historic, and it is imbued with 100 years of hospitality. It has marvelous, hand-carved, ornate, Victorian-era wooden carvings and fixtures, tables. It feels like it's been here for 100 years. And you walk in, and it is bright and vibrant and refreshed and just waiting to make happy times. From the artwork on the walls to the vibe in the courtyard, the new Coronet and Fonda La Hermanita are magical. It's truly magical. And I will tell you, if you're new to Tucson, if you're only here for the weekend, if you've come in for the train, we'll talk about all this a little later, but if you're here and you want to know what Tucson really is and what it feels like, come down here. Come into this space and look around and feel what I think is the new essential must visit to Tucson. To me, this does, is, and feels like what the Arizona is in another part of town. Only this is welcoming in a way that is befitting the relaxed and easy vibe of the barrio. Come have breakfast in the barrio with me this morning here at Fonda La Hermanita. We're going to talk to Chef Erica in just a few minutes. She and her team of remarkable culinarians are doing revived and reimagined versions of classic Sonoran cuisine, Tucson food, and breakfast food. The menu is exceptional, and they're using brilliant local ingredients. Today, they're making empanadas with crispy bacon, just a kiss of chili, and the dates from Sabrina Regas's very own Urban Grove up on the northwest side of town. They serve delicious food all day long, including moletes, gorditas. They've got the most sumptuous, comforting. I literally believe that when I tasted it for the first time, I said, when I'm dying, bring me some of this. It was the caldo de pollo, but it's not a chicken soup like anything anyone's ever seen or had. Rich with a savory chicken broth, seasonal local vegetables made with free-range chickens, and these incredible chocoyotes, these corn masa dumplings. They were so delicious. And there's a kiss of sage that nods to the desert environment we're in, where you smell the sage and taste the sage. It's just utterly incredible. Of course, they have eggs, and they have frijoles, and they have ensaladas, and they've got aguas frescas, and they've got fantastic coffee. But those aren't the only reasons you come. Come to Fonda La Hermanita, get your breakfast, get your coffee, and come sit in the courtyard. It's the same courtyard that one can have dinner in the evenings at the Coronet, where it crackles and percolates with the energy of welcoming hospitality and conviviality. It's really quite remarkable. And if you haven't been here yet, come and applaud what Sally Kane and her team have done here in this remarkable location. Okay, there's a lot going on this time of year. How many of you woke up this morning to the sound of the steam engine rolling through? Of course, the train arrived on Thursday, and if you were lucky enough to be in town or anywhere near downtown on Thursday, and you got to hear the sound of the big steam engine coming into town and blowing its steam whistle, it really is transportive, taking you back in time. So I want you to imagine sitting in a place like this at the Coronet and the Fonda La Minita, and I want you to imagine hearing that magical steam whistle. I want you to imagine that this literally is the ultimate transportation back in time. This is a different Tucson when you combine those two elements together. You can really put yourself in that moment of yesteryear. It's really the most beautiful time of year here. The air is cool in the mornings, the days are warm, the sun is shining. People come from all over the world to experience what we have in season, as they say, in those months in February, March, April, when it's cold and snowy other places, where it's gray and rainy other places. People come here for the sun. Of course, we've got lots of that. But this time of year, I believe, the most unheralded of all. We're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk with a remarkable woman who has done an amazing project, and we're going to share it with you. We'll be back with more on Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy right after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy. Today, we're broadcasting live from the Coronet and its magnificent little sister, as they say. Fonda La Hermanita is a cafe that is open in the mornings, welcoming guests and inviting you to come down and have breakfast in the barrio with us. If you woke up this morning to the sound of the steam engine rolling through, thank you, Southern Pacific. That was such a treat. Of course, the train's going to be in town for you to come down and see. And I suggest you do, because it's a very cool thing. I also want to remind you that today is the Classic Car Show at the Gregory School. I was with some good car friends yesterday talking about which vehicles they were going to bring down. And we want to say hello to the Old Pueblo Trolley Company, who is bringing out their 1938 yellow bus. It's a really groovy, cool, again, throwback in time. Maybe we should be talking about nostalgia and why it is that the things of yesteryear are so compelling to us, especially in a place like this, where it has a timeless feel and a timeless quality about it. I also would like to point out that we are in the throes of harvest season, and with Halloween right around the corner, have you made your trip out to Buckaloo's yet? Have you gone to pick out your pumpkin yet? Have you decided what you're going to wear for Halloween? We'd love to hear from you. 520-790-2040. 520-790-2040. Up next, in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to our superstar author who is here with us. She was on with us last week. We had a couple of technical difficulties in hearing the beautiful message of her remarkable work about her book called A Place at the Table and how chefs who were born in foreign lands come and enrich our culture by inviting us to their tables. But before we do that, we actually just had a friend call in. The vintage oracle herself, Rianne Maldonado, is on the phone live from an event that she wants to invite us all to. Hey, Rianne, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Jennifer. How are you?
I miss you so much. I loved it when you came into the studio and did this with us live. Can I just tell you?
Oh, me too. Me too.
Life is not the same.
And I heard you just mentioned vintage or, you know, days of yesteryear, and here I am in my vintage clothes getting ready to do this event I wanted to tell you about really quick. Down at 4443 East Speedway at the Midtown Mercantile Merchants, there's a Halloween party today from 11 to 3, and tarot readings are on the house. There's also going to be a costume contest for the kids and trick-or-treating, so it looks like it's going to be a really fun event.
So it's 4443 Speedway. I don't know this building. Yeah. Do I?
Oh, I don't know, but it is so fantastic. You've got to come check it out. It is I think it's over 100 different vintage vendors in one location, and it is so beautiful. And Tammy Mitchell, the owner of it, she runs it, and she makes it just the most welcoming, beautiful, fun place to be. And she's hosting this Halloween party for the public.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's for grown-ups and kids? Kids are encouraged to attend?
Yes, kids are encouraged to attend. Grown-ups can shop, kids can trick-or-treat, and you can pop over for a quick little tarot reading.
I love that. And where can we find you on the premises?
I'm going to be in the back towards the right in the Halloween section. There's a whole beautiful section decorated, and I'll be in a tent back there.
And when you're not there, you're, of course, at the Shy Moon Center. Let's just tell everybody where Shy Moon Center is.
Sure. It's the solar-powered offices at 2030 East Broadway, Suite 221.
Before you go, would you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Could you just for today me some radio Reiki?
Absolutely. Okay, let's take a deep breath. And if you're in a place where you can close your eyes, go ahead and do that. And I just want you to breathe deep. And we're going to say, just for today, I will not anger, I will love. Just for today, I will not worry. Just for today, I will be true to myself and others. Just for today, I will give thanks for my many blessings. Just for today, I will be kind to my neighbor and every living thing. Just for today.
I love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for letting me do that.
That felt very special today. Thank you very, very much, Mianne Maldonado. Now, we should also point out that the Shy Moon Center is a place where you do a lot of classes. Tell everybody a little bit about what you do there so we can make people really curious to come and see you.
At the Shy Moon Center, I'm a Reiki master, so I do Reiki therapy. I also teach tarot, do tarot readings, and coming up on December 7th and 8th, I am very, very excited. I am offering a Reiki Level 1 class. It's a two-day class, and I am busy preparing for that because it's going to be very, very special. And there's more information about everything that I do there at RianneMaldonado.com.
Have a great event today. Everybody, let's go see her out at the Halloween party at the Mercantile.
Yay.
At 4443 East Speedway.
Thanks, Jennifer. Bye-bye.
Bye, hon. 520-790-2040 is our phone number. We would love to hear from you. What's going on today? Where are you? And what do you want to make sure we tell everybody about? Because this is our table where we share the conviviality that is the pleasure of coming together and breaking bread with our families and our friends and our new friends. Oftentimes, the best way to make a new friend in a new place is by sharing the food that is your soul, the things you grew up with, the things that you make. The very notion of the food we bring with us is at the heart of the marvelous new book that my next guest has produced. She is joining us at our table to talk about the marvelous look at tables around the world, and the chefs who were born in foreign lands who have come to our country and culture to enrich us with the cuisine that they love. Gabrielle Langholtz, welcome back. How are you today?
Great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, you sound amazing. Can I tell you, you sound so good.
Oh,
I was so disappointed last week. We had a little technical difficulty. I don't know what it was, but you sound marvelous this morning. Thank you for making time to come back.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Can I just tell you, I read your book before your interview last week, and then I revisited it again this week, and it's like a great movie that you go back and you see new things each time. Right? And you wrote it, right? Like, that's kind of an interesting and compelling narrative that we could just explore for an hour if we had the time. But I want to make sure we talk about the heart and soul of this book and what gave birth to this project.
Great. Well, in a nutshell, the heart and soul of this book is honoring and celebrating the immigrants who have come here to this country from around the world and are good for our kitchens and good for our country. So, you know, and maybe we chatted about it a little bit last time, there's a stereotype about what immigrants mean for American food, and that folks in the back of the restaurant washing dishes, peeling potatoes, maybe don't speak English. And sure, that exists and is part of the story, but it's such an incomplete part of what immigrants mean to American cuisine today. So this project that I did with the Vilcek Foundation celebrates 40 specific immigrant chefs from coast to coast who are rising stars from around the world. And they have had a very diverse breadth of experiences, and they run amazing kitchens. Two of them have 3 Michelin stars. Many of them have James Beard Awards, and their food is pretty incredible.
Talk a little bit. Let's talk about the foundation itself. Tell us a little bit about the story of Jan and Marka Vilcek, because I think it's at the heart of the inspiration for this. And it's a reminder in this troubled time of how important the contributions in every dimension the immigrants who have come to this country have brought and made.
Amen. Jan and Maritza Vilcek came to this country as penniless refugees. They came as immigrants from the former Czechoslovakia. They had one suitcase between the two of them. And they found opportunity here, as so many immigrants before and since have. They found a welcoming place, and they created amazing things. Jan is a biomedical scientist. He became a professor of biomedical science at NYU, New York University. Maritza is an art historian and worked for many years at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And they made their own personal fortune through a medicine that Jan patented, which is an arthritis drug, the most prescribed arthritis drug around the world, Remicade. And they have since given away over $100 million to say thank you for the opportunity that they found here and to support the arts and sciences in this country, and very specifically to honor fellow immigrants and their contributions in every field. People from around the world bring talents and ideas and come here and contribute. So they present the Vilcek Prizes every year in biomedical science and in a rotating category of arts. So I worked with the foundation in, I believe it was 2010, the first year they presented awards to immigrants in the culinary arts. And I'll mention when they presented awards in dance, Mikhail Baryshnikov won that year. When they presented in music, it was Yo-Yo Ma. So really honoring and hoping to shift public perception a little bit about what the extraordinary talents of so many people who have moved here from around the world. So the year that we first did the culinary prizes, we convened a jury of experts from Gourmet Magazine, when it still existed, Food and Wine, James Beard Foundation, and the top winner that year was Jose Andreas from Spain, who used his prize money, which is unrestricted, you can do whatever you want with it, but he used his prize money to found World Central Kitchen, which is amazing, and serves people in crisis in this country and beyond. And this past April, we presented the most recent round of culinary awards for immigrants. And the top prize, the $100,000 prize, went to Marcus Samuelson, a chef who was born in Ethiopia, adopted to a family in Sweden with his sister, and grew up in Sweden, moved to New York in his 20s, and is now a citizen of America, a little bit of a citizen of the world, cooked Obama's first White House state dinner. And like so many of the chefs in this book, well, I'll mention, in the process of working on these prizes and considering so many candidates, we had a short list. Our short list was over 100 chefs. We realized we have to make a book to honor so many of these chefs who are elevating and expanding American cuisine from coast to coast. So I'll go on, but let me just pause there in case you want to jump in and ask any questions.
I do, and I want to mention, and I don't know if you know this, but I did a project with Marcus Samuelson several years ago when his book, Africaia, The Soul of the New Cuisine, came out before he began his foray into the reimagination of amalgamating these influences of his culinary existence from Ethiopia, from Sweden, from the United States, from his travels. Before he gave, before he hatched Red Rooster, we were very fortunate. We created a line of spices for him called the Africaya line that were blended versions of the recipes that appeared in his cookbook. And to this day, people will come to me and say the Berbere spice and the Ras Al Hanout and the Harissa were some of the best versions of those. And we're exploring how those flavors still influence today. So those were delicious. And Marcus is a lovely friend, and I salute him on his award last year, as is Jose. And I love that you can track that success of the prize back into the community as it does its loaves and fishes. And I can imagine that Jan and his family could only dream a dream so big as to imagine that these prizes would become the loaves and fishes that they have.
Absolutely.
Multiplied really out in manifest ways. Hey, let me ask a different question, because I'm going to go a little fangirl here. And one of the chefs you feature is Dominique Crenn. And I have to tell you, there are not many people working in the culinary world who are as fascinating, captivating, and remarkable. I don't know that she gets the full credit she deserves, although the world has woken up to her genius. Talk a little bit about the women in this book and how difficult the immigrant journey is, doubly so for the women.
Yep. Dominique Crenn is one of the few European-born chefs in the book, which show how things have evolved over the decades. I believe she was the first woman chef in the United States to win 3 Michelin stars about a year ago. And she had 2 Michelin stars, which is already pretty impressive. And she's one of 2 immigrant chefs in the book who have 3, which of course is the most.
What's the highest achievement one can?
3, exactly. Exactly. But she talks about how she could not have had this career in France, that she herself says the opportunities for women are not what they are here. But so many of the chefs in this book, when I interviewed them, talked about a little bit, you know, there's the opportunity that they found here as an individual, as a citizen, as building a life here and building a career. But they also talk a lot, many of them really return to this theme of the opportunity of breaking the rules in the kitchen or working kind of without this very strict, like in France, for example, or in Italy or in Japan, so many of these great cuisines of the world, there is a correct way to make something and everything else is the wrong way. And you can't even call it champagne if it wasn't grown in Champagne, and you probably have to be personally descended from the right family, right? So there's so little opportunity, as so many of these chefs at least said to me in their interviews, to riff and, blur these lines and cross-pollinate and reinvent. I mean, I have one chef
Isn't that an interesting point, Gabrielle, that you bring up? Because one of the things that asks is, where does this lead us to in the future relative to culinary evolution? Everything must grow, change, and evolve. And yet we must have the foundational basis of basics and essentials from which to grow. In musical terms, I'll go to jazz. You can't be a great jazz musician until you've fundamentally mastered the essential basics and fundamentals of musicology and basic musicianship. So the same is true, of course. And the only way we, as cultural citizens of the culinary world, can be united by food is if we have the same common language with which to be united by it. And I don't mean language with words. The language of understanding what's on the plate, in the spoon, in the kitchen, in the pot. There are certain essentials to that. And yet, without the immigrants coming with their own culinary background to this country and recognizing that something we had indigenously here in North America that we didn't recognize was as delicious and nutritious, and they transformed it through the lens and funnel of their own cuisine. Now we have it as part of an American regional cuisine, wherever that is.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
no easy way. When you say the line is blurred, I mean, to me, this is the most fascinating thing, living in border towns. We're in a border town in Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
The border is blurred. This isn't merely a hard and fast line. It's the Sonoran region, right? So
right.
How do we take these ideas of evolution? What did you learn about the idea of evolution from your chefs?
Well, I think I completely agree with you that you must know the rules before you can break the rules, and you must master technique before you can go on to innovate and invent. Not that you said those exact words, but I think that's what you meant, and I wholeheartedly agree. And this is a real lineup of chefs with absolute mastery of technique. I mean, many of them graduated the top of their class from culinary school and have cooked at several of them cooked at NoMa in Copenhagen, regarded as by many as the single best restaurant in the world. And as I say, many of them
with Rene Redzepi and this idea that the moment is the moment, and they cook very much in the present. And yet there are so many moments in kitchens that have to be prescribed by the past. So to mm-hmm. me, this is like one of the most fundamental genius aspects of this project in this book.
Oh, wonderful. I love hearing you look at it in a new way. And I think that it presents the chefs themselves, not it being the book, but it being the culinary opportunity in this country's cuisine to create something new. So if you look, all of these chefs, really nobody is cooking the exact cuisine of their home country of birth or the recipe the exact way that their great-grandmother would have made it. I mean, maybe
right.
there are a few exceptions. Night Yan, a Cambodian refugee in Oakland, whose restaurant Nyam Bai has, after we presented her with one of the $50,000 awards, she was then named one of the best new chefs in the country by Food & Wine. So we're in good company in honoring her. She's one who is making a pretty traditional presentation of a dish, and but it's a cuisine that many Americans don't know. I mean, due to
right.
the horrible history and the genocide in that country. I mean, people here in the United States know Vietnamese food and Thai food, and you know, there are a lot of even Ethiopian food. There are a lot of cuisines from the world that we know. Cambodian is really new to us.
Right.
So that's an example where I think she's doing something new and doing something old at the same time. But the vast majority of these chefs are really inventing something, creating something. I mean, you look at Fabian von Hausk, who's another of the winners of the Vilcek Foundation Prize, born in Mexico City, has cooked around the world. I mean, I think he's like 27 or 28 years old. Also honored with a Michelin star, and cooking on the Lower East Side. And I think if you went into this restaurant and had this extraordinary meal and said, where in the world is this person from? I don't think you would be likely to guess Mexico. I mean, you might
Isn't
think
that interesting?
Or Israel or France. I mean, it reflects flavors of the world, superior techniques of anywhere, but really saying something new with his co-chef, Jeremiah, who's grown up in Maryland and Asian American himself. So much of this is not about a kind of slavish, quote unquote, authentic repetition, but about creation. I mean, of putting kimchi on a taco, of putting kimchi on a pizza, and of really working up the forefront, the frontier. I mean, Chef Ed Lee in Louisville, Kentucky, he's putting kimchi. I don't know why I keep specifically calling out kimchi, but there is a thread there with quail and riffing on Southern cuisine in Kentucky and the flavors that he grew up with, born in Korea, grew up in Brooklyn, and really inventing something that is his own personal story translated into food, and it doesn't exist, but he's making something completely new and completely American.
My guest is Gabrielle Langholtz. The book is called A Place at the Table, New American Recipes from the Nation's Top Foreign-Born Chefs. It's out by Prestel Press. I'd like to ask you a question about the idea of arts, and in particular the fine arts, because this book is an homage to the recognition of the rich role that art plays in our lives. For a long time, the fine arts were the limited purview of things like sculptors and painters, musicians mm-hmm. and composers. Mm-hmm. There has been debate in my career from the last 25 years over whether the culinary arts are in fact part of the dominion of capital F fine arts. From the moment I first tasted and tasted with wonder as a very young child, to me it was magical. But was it art? It was compelling and beloved, but was it art? And so we ask the question that this book celebrates: are the fine arts the domain of the culinary arts? And it seems like Jan Vilcek and his family have said, in fact, these are not only arts, they're arts and sciences. You can't have one without the other. We're celebrating them both. And in the production of this book that really celebrates the artistic turns and inspirations of these subjects, you make a very compelling case for the fact that, in fact, culinary arts belong in the capital F fine arts.
I do think so. I would put it on a spectrum.
Oh, can you still hear me?
There you go.
Hey, still got me? Great.
Yeah, we got you.
I would put it on this, a spectrum. It depends on the skill and intention of the maker. In the same way, I could make a painting or a sculpture, perhaps, and I don't think it would qualify as fine art, and it probably wouldn't get to hang in the Whitney. And I can crochet a hat, but it doesn't belong on a runway, and it's not going to be in the pages of Vogue, and it's not going to redefine or win awards. So, sure, I can make a quesadilla for lunch today, and it probably wouldn't be fine art or culinary art. But there is an echelon of extraordinary innovation, skill, achievement, and invention across these categories of creativity. And that type of cuisine, I absolutely do define as fine art. But I also want to stop short as saying something needs to be expensive. It needs to be on a white tablecloth. It needs to be, quote unquote, fine dining to be important, meaningful, delicious. I mean, I think in the past 10, 15 years in this country, we have seen a greatly deserved recognition of some pretty amazing food served on paper plates, served out of a truck window sometimes. And we've also seen plenty of chefs, I think, who had expensive backers and have fancy degrees and have served a $30 entree plenty of times, who said, I want to do something different. I want to get rid of this white tablecloth, and I'm going to open a completely different concept and sell stuff for $8. So I think bringing that kind of intention, attention to flavor, to sourcing, to seasoning, is not something that is necessarily the purview of fine dining. And you can also have a bunch of terrible food in French service and high pricing. So, but I love the way you asked that question. I think it's really interesting to wrestle with and consider.
And I love that you dropped a couple of Mrs. Maisel Easter eggs in there for us. The book is called A Place at the Table: New American Recipes from the Nation's Top Foreign-Born Chefs. The author, Gabrielle Langholz, thank you for coming back on the show. Thank you for sharing this time with us. Thank us for making us think and imagine. I want to try the recipes. I want to make them for my friends. I want to make them with what I have here and understand that, in fact, I don't have to slavishly be compelled with every turn to paint by numbers. This is not, if anything, it says not exactly paint by numbers. It says... live this, breathe this, be this. It makes me feel inspired. And to me, that's the greatest gift of all. And of course, the gifts of these chefs, restaurateurs, and original recipes do a lot to inspire. Thank you so much for bringing this book to life. And thanks for coming back on with us here on Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Will you come back and visit us again?
Well, I'd love to. I hope I can come in person next time.
I hope you can come in person, too. Can I tell you, you've got to come and have some tacos here with us. We are masters in the fine art of tacos.
I was there about a year ago, and I miss it very much. I'll have to come back.
We're going to take a very quick break. And when we do, Chef Erica from Fonda La Ermenita, where we are broadcasting live today in the courtyard of the Coronet, live downtown, City of Gastronomy. This is Breakfast in the Barrio. You are listening to Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy. I'm Jennifer English. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy, having breakfast in the Barrio at the amazing Fonda La Ermenita. Okay, so in the courtyard of the Coronet, the very heart and soul of a location that has, for historic number of years, welcomed guests. Previously as Cushing Street, but the space is a sacred welcoming space. Sitting here this morning in the booth room, just off the wonderful tiled courtyard in which people are drinking coffee and eating coyotes and molettes and enjoying this incredible caldo de pollo that has a kiss of sage that says taste of place, that tells you you're in the desert, that tells you are in the place of welcoming created by this extraordinary team. Sally Kane had a dream, and when she realized that it was possible to reawaken from hibernation this place of hospitality to welcome guests anew with a spirit and energy, cuisine and intention, with Chef Muriel Barassi and Chef Devin and the other teammates in the Coronet side in the evenings, bringing food to life that doesn't taste like any place else on the planet. And in the mornings, we turn to an extraordinary team that has been put together by Chef Erica, who has for many years been in our midst. And it's all been leading up to this beautiful moment where she welcomes her guests every morning with an idea of what it is to start your day. Dressed, festooned, I should say, with these glorious aprons that speak to the welcoming, the bright, the happy, the colorful, manifest in agua frescas and ensaladas and sopas. Of course, it's pet friendly. Chef Erica, thank you so much for hosting us here today. It is such a treat and a pleasure and an honor to be here with our first broadcast from Fonda La Ermenita.
Thank you so much. We're so happy that you're here and enjoying it as much as you are and just putting beautiful words to it all.
Talk to us a little bit about what the dream and intention was for Fonda La Ermenita.
Well, we wanted to really keep the word Fonda in our, you know, in the forefront of our minds, a neighborhood place, very small menu, a place where the neighborhood could come and enjoy a very fresh, flavorful meal, but have it be just very well considered, really small and made with a lot of love. And we are so lucky that we have Pivot Produce supplying us with 96.7% of our produce locally in our restaurant. We have Carla Valdivia, pastry chef extraordinaire, who's making our breads and our beautiful Mexican-inspired pastries daily. And what I wanted to bring to the table, my idea for the menu itself, was central and southern Mexican influenced. So, you know, familiar flavors, but maybe presented in a different way. You know, a great example are the gorditas. We all have an idea of what a gordita might be. I mean, just based off of, you know, what Taco Bell has a gordita, but a true gordita is this beautiful masa cake that's split open, steaming inside, filled with just delicious proteins, always with beans, fresh vegetables. And so familiar flavors, things that we all grew up, you know, if you're from the Southwest, you know a tortilla, you know masa, but we wanted to just put a fresh, twist on it and really get those flavor inspirations from Central and Southern Mexico as opposed to strictly Sonora.
Two things I want to go back. Mm-hmm. What is a fonda for people who are not from here?
So a fonda is generally a little restaurant that's in an inn or a mom and pop hotel, almost like a bed and breakfast situation where the owners or the proprietors are making a few different meals a day for the guests that are there. So it's really a neighborhood place. So if you see a fonda in Latin America, you can expect a very small menu, very well considered, using hyper local ingredients often, and not a huge variety, but everything at the peak of freshness and flavor, which is nice.
One of the things that my last guest, the author of a book called A Place at the Table, how foreign-born chefs have come to this country with new recipes that enrich the culinary culture and tapestry of the United States. I was talking to her about the idea of how one evolves cuisine. Mm-hmm. Rather than slavishly adhering to this is the only way to make empanadas, this is the only way to make gorditas, you said something really interesting and compelling just moments ago when you said that you were doing them a little bit differently. I'm going to imagine that there's a reason for that. How are you inspired, confidently inspired, to take these beloved traditional cuisine elements from the really rustic, humble, simple fonda origins and create them with such exquisite execution?
Well, I think for all of us in the kitchen, we are passionate about a beautiful execution. But, you know, we've all had... just as an example on what we're doing in the fonda, you know, when you have a platter of Mexican food, we often get, you know, a little bit of a garnish that's usually like a iceberg lettuce and a slice of tomato. What we're trying to do is bring the most gorgeous greens, the most beautiful little slices of cucumber and radish, local ingredients, and just bringing a color, a pop to the plate that that is unexpected. You know what I mean?
You cook with love. You cook with passion. It's located at 198 West Cushing Street. Say it for us one more time.
Fonda La Hermanita.
Chef Erica Busick, thank you so much. And thank you for listening. When you get home today, do me a favor. Hug your kids, count your blessings, and join me again for breakfast in the barrio.